podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the second Wiz and Ashes Daily podcast at Headingley. Somehow, Mel, somehow England are still in with a chance. They were 142-7 at lunch, the urn was slipping away, and then Ben Stokes. Take it away if you could find anything new to say about him.
Well, it's deja vu all over again, right? It's just incredible the way he's able to flick that switch. And we know what often happens when England's backs are very much to the wall, but it's almost superhuman. And he spoke about it after Lord's, is the way that he just creates this bubble and he's able to stay so focused on that and have such clarity of mind in the way that he approaches the batting, particularly when he's batting with the tail. So it was amazing. And I was actually thinking about last time here at Headingley, when he was, you know, he got 2 off 50, and then the next day it was Johnny Bairstow who came in. And sometimes that happens, I feel, with those two. Bairstow coming in sometimes seems to unlock something in Stokes' approach. And today it was Mark Wood coming in and just clattering the ball around, which was quite incredible. That seemed to be the point, and the, of course, the realization that, again, Stokes has found himself in with the tail, where he's just able to control the game. That's what it feels like. And the way he went after Todd Murphy, it was like, welcome to Ashes cricket, sunny boy. It was phenomenal. And I was having those flashbacks, I can tell you. Him taking the off-spinner down, some of those sixes were absolutely enormous. It was the Western Terrace up, going absolutely nuts again. So it is just amazing that he has this ability to flick that switch, go into that beast mode that Ben Stokes can get into, and just the fact that he's able to do it at will. It's not just a one-off. He's done this so many times now. I think it makes him the most fascinating cricketer in the world, and he is the best at who is better than him at batting with the tail? I don't think there is at all anyone who's able to do quite what he does, but it has to be a concern for England that they have relied on him doing this so many times, and they found themselves in that position again today. And I don't think any of us can cope if they're in that position again in the fourth innings, and there's every chance that they could be.
Yeah, it's just amazing how calculated he was, because when Mark Wood, you know, he made 24 off 8, which was ridiculous, but it was great fun. When Mark Wood got out, you know, he was four short of what Ben Stokes had made at that point. Ben Stokes only had 28. And then he hits 3 fours off Stark and another 4 off Cummins. But I think his first six only comes after the ninth wicket falls. And then Ollie Robinson comes in. He's obviously got a bad back and can't run. And that's when he starts hitting the sixes and targeting that. And it was just, and all the six came off the spinner as well. It was just, yeah, you can talk about Ben Stokes as being, you know, this, he's talismanic. He's sort of like, he's playing on instinct, but there was so much brain in what he did today as well.
That's what I mean about the control.
Yeah.
It is just, it's like he sees the game just in terms of what he personally does to just create the situation and then make it his own. And I just don't see anyone else doing it. It's like, he knows he could hit a six on any particular ball and he just chooses, okay, where the field is, who's bowling, what ball of the over are we in now? And it goes through all his mind like a computer, and then he just goes on that. It is like some sort of cricket video game, but the Ben Stokes one.
We should go back to that first session, because at the break, England fans were absolutely fuming. Like I had WhatsApp groups that were going crazy. There were, you know, the pundits kind of tearing in, and some of those dismissals did look ugly, right? Like Bairstow, what, slashes one, Moen and Chris Wokes both attacked the short ball and got out. Was that another case of Baswell being found out? Is pinning the blame on England's approach fair, do you think?
Look, I think Australia have just done things really well. They've done the basics really well. Their bowling plans have been incredibly good. They've stuck to them. They've got the bowlers who can execute them really well. And hey-ho, they also tend to hold on to their catches, which has been a massive part of it. I mean, I think England's fielding errors have been a bigger part of this than Bazball, if you like, in where the situation is. Because if England even cut down those mistakes by half, you think they could actually be up 2-0 in this series. That's not completely outrageous to think that. So I don't know that it's just about the approach. I think there have been some poor shots. At that stage, I guess they were looking at it with that total sort of being a certain amount away, right, we're just going to have to try and get there as quickly as possible. That's our only way. And Australia did go short again. They went to that short plan. So you find yourself back at Lord's where they're thinking, well, we have to find ways to score. If they're just going to bowl short at us, we have to find ways of scoring, because otherwise we're going to go for 10 overs where we're going to make maybe 30 runs and then, you know, we're going to be out anyway. So I kind of can see their point of view that it's about the execution rather than the actual plan behind it. But then I also understand fans' reactions. The thing is, if they ended up getting those runs, if they end up winning this test, people will love it. They loved it when Markwood came out. Mm. The crowds here went absolutely bonkers when Markwood came out. And as you said, he suddenly pushed the score along. And they scored about 50 runs in the first 20 minutes of the second session. And all of a sudden, they got themselves to within, what was it, 26 runs of Australia's target by doing that. Would they have done that by playing another way? I don't know. This is the constant conundrum of Bazball. Would they do any better doing things another way? Do we have to just take hats off to Australia and say, well, they've just had the plans that have made their execution poor, and they've capitalized them on them?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with most of that, and I'd add just a couple of things. One is that, like, first, that, like, England didn't actually attack too much in that first session.
Yeah,
they scored pretty slowly. It's one of their slowest scoring sessions in the Bazball era, the stats guys tell us. But they just kind of, I mean, they got it wrong when they did attack. And also the ways in which they got it wrong, it wasn't exactly the game plan, it was the execution. Like Bairstow's especially, that was a half volley, which should have been put away and just wasn't. And Bairstow, you know, would back himself to do that most times, and you kind of want him attacking half volleys. That's why Bairstow is Bairstow. And then Moens was ugly, fine, that was bad.
Well, it was made worse, it was made uglier by the fact that he had just done the same thing in the same over, and the ball had, luckily, it seemed at the time, just plugged in between three converging fielders. So it does look a lot uglier when you play the same shot just a few balls later and you get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then, and Wokes was, I can see the thing with Wokes as well, in that Australia are going short at him. He's not a brilliant player of the short ball, and you're not going to survive for that long. And even if you do, you're not going to score runs. So you've got to try something. Like I kind of get that. And then I guess also, as you say, Australia, not just that they've played better, they kind of just are better, right? Like they've got loads of batters in the top 10 of the rankings. If you were to pick a combined 11, you'd maybe have like a couple of Englishmen in it, but like it would be dominated by Australians. And I guess we also saw that the worst dismissal of the day came from, you know, a guy who you would be say is pretty anti-Bazball in Marnus Labuschagne, right? He was like a weird sort of slog sweep to Moeen Ali, and you could just see, like, as soon as it, well, not as soon as it went up, because he was watching, hoping for a reprieve, but, you know, as we've seen from England, is not that unlikely. And then when it went into the hands, he just went down his haunches for so long, was muttering to himself for so long. But it just shows that you can kind of get out to a bad shot no matter how you play, I guess. On Marnus, he's quietly not had a great tour so far, right? Like in four tests, if you include the World Championship final, he's yet to pass 50. He's averaging about 26 in that time, I think. And actually, if you look a bit more generally, so in away tests, his average has now dipped under 40. He's only got 100 outside Australia. Obviously, he comes into this series as the world's number one batter, but so much of that is built on runs at home where I've just 70. Is it fair to ask if this guy just might not be quite as good as we thought? And if so, what kind of return should we expect from him going forward?
I mean, I think it says a bit about Australia generally when it comes to the batting. Mm-hmm. And also the situation Australia has found themselves in the past few years. Like, Australia don't play away from home nearly as much as a team like, for example, England. Mm-hmm. And especially with the effects of COVID, they've played even fewer tests at home. So since the 2019 Ashes, they've only played three away series. They played in Pakistan, then Sri Lanka and India in the space of all of it. Within a year and a half. So they're the only test series that they've played away, that Marnus has played away in that time. And I mean, if you look at some of the other batters in the Australian side, as you look at Usman Khawaja, his has come together a lot, the home and away averages has come together a lot. But that's since he came back into the Australian side during the last Ashes in Australia. Before that, people thought, well, you can't select Usman Khawaja away because, well, he can't score in England and he can't play spin. So he can't really select him in the subcontinent. So, and then this time around, since he's come back, the reinvented, a guy who knows his game so much better and who's worked on so many things, his averages actually come much closer together. And he did have great tours and he's come here and scored in the place where he supposedly couldn't score runs. So even Travis Head, his average is much further apart as well when you look at home and away. So that says a lot about, A, Australia play a lot more games at home and fewer away than anyone else. And when they're at home, they tend to dominate and bully. And they've got a great bowling attack at home that takes sides apart. The batters catch in. Warner is another fantastic example where his home and away average, his home average is almost double his away average. So it's not just Marnus. I think it's partly a reflection of just those other couple of factors as well. But I mean, that today, that wicket, I think, was just as much a Mark Wood's wicket as it was Moeen Ali's, because he was under so much pressure and you could see that he was being troubled by Mark Wood. And then he gets Moeen up the other end and he thinks he can get him away. Moeen had one that turned a bit today, but wasn't getting much turn. He was very economical, only went at two and over. But that feeling of okay, this is how, you know, this is how I'm going to have to score. I'm going to go for Moeen Ali. And Smith's was a very non-Smith shot as well. So I guess it's too early to judge when it comes to Marnus, because a lot of people were quick to judge Usman Khawaja mm-hmm. as well. And they might have to play a lot more series. But when he came in 2019, as a concussion substitute for Steve Smith, I mean, he scored four half centuries on the bounce, I think, straight away. And I thought he would do better here with the amount of time he's spent at Glamorgan as well. So, look, we'll see. I think jury's still out, if it's allowed to still be out. But he might not score a lot of runs this series. He gets himself in and then makes a start and gets himself out.
Yeah, I guess it's. I think that's all fair. But I guess what you're basically saying is that at the moment, he sits kind of like among the pack of Australia's batters behind Steve Smith and Khawaja at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But I guess at one point you're looking at this guy thinking like, might he be as good as Steve Smith? At one point, you know, his average was the best since Bradman.
But that's,
right now, he's not that good.
I don't think he is. And so you mentioned Bradman. I mean, well, Smith is, sorry, Labuschagne is the second fastest batter to 3,000 runs after Bradman, I think is equal with Everton Weekes in terms of innings. So, but you have to remember that he came back into the side for that series in England, and then he played a whole bunch at home, basically. Yeah. And so perhaps that has flattered him a little bit in terms of the massive runs, you know, they scored against teams like West Indies at home, where he really, really cashed in. It's if you look at Steve Smith is the one player whose average is much closer. And you find that with all the great players, right? Because Bradman was actually, I think he was slightly higher away mm-hmm. than it was at home. And players like Ricky Ponting. So over a career, perhaps those things, you do get the measure of the great players who are able to bat at home. But Steve Smith definitely, you think is still miles ahead of anyone else.
Yeah. Well, so as you say, so Smith and Labuschagne both out to Moeen. And I thought he bowled really well, actually, even though the two wickets were kind of were gifts in a way. He bowled 17 overs at 2 and over. And it's actually, that's massive for England. Like, Robinson's injured, but he's expected to bowl on day 3. So that's like, if you can kind of think, if they can get through the final session without too much damage, then they've got a chance. And Moeen was basically vital in doing that, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. And he was just on the press conference. And he said that was the most pleasing thing that he'd bowled. I think it was 17 on the trot, especially when you think about the trouble he had with his finger. He showed it to us afterwards. It still looks pretty horrible, that cut. But he said it felt okay. And he said he felt really comfortable. He paid a lot of tribute to Ben Stokes' captaincy, loves bowling under him as a captain. Mo's such a confident player, isn't he? And they're taking away that kind of worry that if you get hit for a few, it makes you go into your shell. And without that, it's been great for him to go that long and only go at 2 and over. He said that was something that particularly pleased him because he has been prepared to be hit for a few. That sort of restriction has been lifted on him. So hugely important. And one of the things that everyone doubted, I think, a lot about Moeen coming back into this side. So I didn't think he was going to be coming to the press conference after his innings, but then he got there and, 200th test wicket, he undoubtedly thought that would never happen either. So it's a really nice milestone for Mo.
Yeah, and actually I think it shows the importance of fielding as well, which obviously is been critical of England's four in the series. But it's maybe like the fourth over that Moeen bowled, the first ball was a full toss that was just the batter missed out on it. Then he gets cut for 4 next ball and you're thinking like, oh, okay, this could get ugly here. But then actually there were like 2 or 3 more stops in that over when he sort of went short and wide and got cut, but they were stopped either just behind square or at point basically. And then after that, he was basically into his rhythm and bowling really nicely. And you mentioned the 200 wickets thing. He's also, you think, only 28 runs from reaching 3,000 runs, and he would be just the 16th Test cricketer to that double, and the list is a pretty good one. It's fascinating poise, isn't it? Australia effectively 142 for 4, pitch still looking pretty good. It might rain tomorrow, but even if it does, we'll still be here. So please do join us then. Cheers.
Podcast Network.